Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tucker Milling. Join Andy Schneider, National Spokesperson for the USDA APHIS Avian Health Program, Editor-in-Chief of Chicken Whisperer Magazine, and author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, Chicken Factor Chicken Poop, and Zero Waste Chicken Keeping, as he welcomes top poultry veterinarians, poultry scientists, and poultry nutritionists to discuss the hot topics in the poultry world today, and provide science-based, fact-based, study-based information to help you raise the healthiest poultry possible. And now, here's your host, Andy Schneider.
Happy New Year, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by our good friends over at Tucker Milling. Maybe that's a New Year's resolution you can make, is to next time you go to the local feed store, pick up some Tucker Milling. Number one, you'll save a ton of money. And number two, you'll see some great results with your animals. That's how I got associated with them, is that I was currently sponsored by a feed company, and I would run out, or we had shipping delays getting my sponsored feed to me. And I started visiting my local feed store saying, okay, I need some feed before I can get my next allotment from my current sponsor. And I tried all different feeds that were available to me. And out of all of those, I saw some great results and bad results. And boy, the great results were from Tucker Milling. So you know what I did? I reached out to them and said, hey, we need to work together because I really like your product. It's the only feed company in 13 years of doing this. In fact, this is actually, I think, the 14th year of doing this podcast. And in all those years, all my feed sponsors I've had, they're the only ones that I approached. Everybody else approached me. I approached them and said, hey, your product is awesome. Here's the backstory, and I'm getting great results. And guess what? It's like $6-7 cheaper, and I'm getting it. Literally, the food I'm using was made 2 or 3 days ago from their plant right next door in Alabama. So thank you, Tucker Milling, for sponsoring the show. Maybe that can be your New Year's resolution, to try some Tucker Milling feed for all your animals. We use it all here for, of course, our hogs, and we have cows and our turkeys and what else we got, goats, and you name it, our rabbit. So, but thank you very much for tuning in today. We have a great show lined up for you. Happy New Year, of course. Respiratory illnesses, because there's quite a few, and 'tis the season for respiratory illness, both for us humans and for our birds, though, of course, all year long. But oftentimes in the winter, we'll see that, oh, I saw my chicken sneeze. Oh, my chickens are coughing. Oh, I just rescued a chicken and put it in with my other flock without quarantining it for 30 days. And now my entire flock is sneezing and coughing. And so we hear this a lot, and a lot during this season as well. And let's face it, a lot of your birds are cooped up, no pun intended, during this season anyway. It's colder outside. They may not want to spend more time outside, depending on your setup. You may have a $4,000 chicken coop and a little 8x10 run, and they're staying inside because it's cold, or maybe they don't want to go out in the snow. All the chickens I've ever had in decades, if it was up to them, they'd be roosting in the trees when it's -4 degrees and freezing rain. Regardless if I bought them a $4,000 coop or not. But they know how to survive. They've been surviving. They've been domesticated for about 8,000 years, and they've been doing just fine without electricity in their coops. But respiratory illness, and there's all different – you oftentimes hear about coryza and all these others, and sometimes people want to know, and you know, oh, my chicken's got a cough. What's that antibiotic I need to give them? It's right off the bat. And I always really find that's kind of funny because touring the country for a decade and talking to folks firsthand all across the country, I'm like, why did you start your backyard flock? Many, many times. Many times it's, I want to know where my food comes from. I don't want to fool with antibiotics. I don't want to fool with all this other stuff. And I want fresh food for my family. And then their chicken sneezes one time. Whoa, where can I get some antibiotic for my birds? And I'm like, wait a minute. Didn't you just say you wanted to raise birds with no antibiotic? And now the first time your chicken sneezes, you're running out to get antibiotics for them. Hey, what was that antibiotic called you got at Chapter Supply? I need some of that. So, and again, as Dr. Podesky is going to talk about, is that that might not be the first thing we want to reach for. And I'm sure he's going to talk about prevention and biosecurity because it's all tied in to no matter what the topic is pretty much with chickens. But, again, how do we know that antibiotics is actually going to work? How much do you give? And then now, you know, they've taken a lot of the water-soluble antibiotics away, so now you're giving shots and how much do you give? And, I can't, there's not a vet near me. Oh, there's one an hour away, and your chickens aren't worth enough to drive an hour away to see the vet. You know, we've heard it all. But respiratory illness we're going to talk about today. So get that pen and paper out. I'm going to go to commercial break. As soon as we come back, I'll bring on poultry veterinarian Dr. Maurice Podesky, who'll get right into respiratory illness. But I want to say hello to our sponsors here real quick for 2022, which actually, as I was getting the show ready and doing the math, this is our 14th year, well over 1,200 episodes, 14th year of doing this podcast, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, and 22. So we are entering, actually, I think it's next month, February 9th. Was the first show we ever did on AM radio in Atlanta before we moved over about a year later to doing it web-based. And so this is what we're entering in February, our 14th year. So we thank you for all our longtime listeners for making this happen and our longtime sponsors for making this happen. And we'll just go right to our short commercial break, come right back for respiratory illnesses with Dr. Maurice Podesky. Stay with us.
When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialists. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of quality incubators for almost 40 years. They manufacture incubators that hold anywhere from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity controls and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and receive 10% off your entire order. Order your new incubator today at Brensea.com. That's Brinsea.com.
Are you dealing with a stinky coop or brooder? Backyard chicken owners are loving Chick Fresh. Not only does it eliminate the nasty odors, but it also eliminates the dangerous and unhealthy ammonia. You can use Chick Fresh in your coop, brooder, garbage can, litter boxes, and more. Even use it in your spouse's smelly shoes. Get your bottle 15% off today by going to coopcarespecial.com. Take back control and say no to nasty odors.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Strong Animals uses plant-based products and natural approaches to promote the health and vitality of backyard flocks. Our daily snacks, water additives, and coop refresher products contain organic essential oils, prebiotics, and other natural ingredients to promote digestive health and immunity. Give your chicks and chickens what they need to thrive with Strong Animals products. Available at local farm stores across the country and Amazon. Visit GetStrongAnimals.com today to learn more.
And now we return to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer with your host, Andy Schneider.
That button flashed and let me know I'm on the air. All righty, thank you very much for tuning in. Hey, also some good news for 2022. I am yet again going to be testing a new product. Of course, it's another shavings product from not shaving. Okay, I got my beard going on right now, first of the year. I don't know when I'll shave it off, but shavings for your coop and your brooder and your rabbit hutches and everywhere else from American Wood Fibers. They're a longtime sponsor of the show, and you can find their product on Chewy. You can find their product in local farm stores. Heck, you can find their shavings in Ingles. And actually Walmart. So if it's an hour drive to your feed store and you're like, I really don't want to drive an hour, but Walmart's 4 minutes away, you can go get some shavings there from American Wood Fibers right there at your local Walmart. But these are new, and I'm looking forward to testing. I want to say they're paper-based, but I have to look at all the research material that came with it and scientific material. Maybe they're odor control, like we've been testing those for a while. So we'll see what happens with those. But let's get right over here to the phone lines. We'll bring on our good friend, longtime friend, poultry veterinarian, Dr. Maurice Pateski. And thank you for joining us today for this respiratory illness episode. I got your text, so, yeah, there won't be any problem for ending even a little bit earlier. That's perfectly fine. I'm guessing that when it comes to respiratory illnesses, that, you know, a lot of the quote-unquote treatments may be the same, whether you call it this, that, or the other. And I guess it's like humans. Maybe we treat the symptoms, not the actual disease, or, you know, and we'll get into some prevention and whatnot. But nonetheless, that's your specialty. Thank you for tuning in today and joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Andy. Happy New Year. And congratulations or pre-congratulations on your 14th year of the Chicken Whisperer. That's amazing. So.
It's crazy. I got to figure out how the magazine, this may be the seventh year of the magazine. It's either the sixth, fifth, this year, hang on, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. Wow, it may be the eighth year of the magazine. No, I think maybe it's the seventh year of Chicken Whisperer magazine. But either way, we're making some strides, and thank you very much for that. And the podcast is still doing very, very well. I'm so glad that it is, thanks to guests just like you. People want to hear one time when they listen what a poultry veterinarian is going to say, how we should treat our birds versus, you know, someone else who may not have a clue. So we're going to have specialists like you that come on and share all your knowledge with us. And I know you don't mind, because I've sent several people to you over the years, say, hey, email Maurice and ask him these questions, and he'll be more than happy to help you, because I know he's in his extension, and I know he loves educating folks, and this is his forte. So reach out to him and ask him those questions he may have.
Yep. No, thank you for doing that. I love my family will attest to the reality that I can talk about chickens at parties. I can talk about chickens over the phone. I'm that person who will. You'll have difficulty getting me off the phone, but speaking for the audience, Andy, I'm hoping that you continue to do this, and best of health in the for the next year, because you're providing an invaluable service here. So keep doing it. It's really important that this kind of information gets disseminated out to the general public.
Thank you so much. So let's start off with a scenario, and we've kind of done this before, but you know. Someone reaches out to you, they reach out to me, you see a post on one of the forums, I've got a chicken that's really snotty. And, you know, that could incorporate, and we've seen this a whole lot, they'll take a picture of the chicken's face and their eye will be swollen all the way shut. All kinds of junk around it, and it almost looks like pus. And are they ever going to see again? And or maybe they have snot coming out of their nostrils, or maybe they're just coughing or breathing, that, you know, you've got that call. That's a whole lot of symptoms all round up in one. But let's kind of maybe you're going to start where you want to start, and that's fine. But that can be a scenario for us to get started with respiratory illnesses. And I'm sure you'll factor in, like I said earlier, the biosecurity and prevention somewhere along the line, so we don't maybe have to deal with this once we have it. But if we do, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Yeah, it does happen. Even, you know, under the best of circumstances. So when I was in vet school, for example, if you'll indulge me on a little short story here.
Sure.
I remember you'd go to a horse farm, and you'd go inevitably to one farm, and there's barbed wire and nails all over the places, and the horses are fine, right? And then inevitably you go to this one horse farm where everything's immaculate, everything's raked and swept, and there's nowhere for the horses to get hurt. And then literally one nail, the horse, the most expensive horse, steps on, and it causes all kinds of foot problems. So sometimes, you know, I sometimes think that the chickens and the animals do well in spite of us, and sometimes they get sick just as a almost like a karma thing or what have you, in the sense that we do everything we're supposed to do and they still get sick, and then the neighbor or the person, you know, your uncle who's kind of a blowhard, he does everything wrong and his chickens are perfectly healthy. So I understand that, and I've heard that story, and as an epidemiologist, I just told myself that's anecdotal. And we have to kind of look at the general reality, but we've all been in that situation where we're the one that's doing everything right, and then inevitably something goes wrong. So anyway, so I wanted to go back one step. So you talked about your chickens, this chicken scenario that had this kind of gooey kind of eye or something like that, or it's coughing or sneezing or whatever. So in order to do that, though, you've got to be the good owner that looks for and that appreciates when something like that's going on. So sometimes what happens, and this goes to kind of, if you'll indulge me one more time, small animal veterinarians or equine veterinarians, you know, inevitably someone will come to us with a mass on their dog or cat or horse or whatever it is. And it's obviously been there for a while, but they'll always tell you, like, it just popped up yesterday. So, and, you know, on the inside, we'll chuckle a little, won't say anything. But the reality is it didn't pop up yesterday. And that's why, you know, there's a saying that chance favors the prepared mind. So you've got a shot at stopping an outbreak of a disease if you catch it early. So if you've got this hypothetical chicken that's got, you know, coughing or sneezing or some goo or inflammation around the eye, if you see that early and you quarantine that bird, you've got a chance that the rest of the birds don't get sick. But if it's kind of gone on for a few days and now you're seeing, you know, much more overt clinical signs, then unfortunately probably the rest of the flock has it. And that's why it's just really important to be really fastidious with your flock, not only having good biosecurity and doing everything you can to prevent wildlife from coming into your flock and exposing your chickens to various diseases, or equipment or shoes, all the things that we've talked about in the past with respect to biosecurity. But it's also important to have that good eye and to pay attention to how your flock is doing. Are they eating the same amount? Are they drinking the same amount? Do they have the same amount of energy? Do they all look the same? You know, one thing that people don't probably do enough is that when they come into their coop and they've got their overalls or their clothing and boots that are dedicated to their coop, just hold a chicken and listen to it and feel it, because sometimes, you know, this kind of coughing and rattling, if you put the breast of the chicken up against your ear and listen, you can start hearing things that are abnormal. And as we've talked about before, it's really, really hard to understand what abnormal is until you know what normal is. And normal, we think we know normal, but the reality is again, if we just pay attention and we start saying, you know what, I was listening to that chicken breathe a week or two or 3 weeks ago, this sounds different, I'm going to quarantine that bird now, because I don't want the rest of my flock to get whatever is potentially floating around. And as we all know with COVID and things like that, easier said than done. Quarantining is, there's different levels of quarantine, and we all can do the best that we can. But it's important at least to have a fighting chance to figure out what's going on and to potentially sometimes even treat a respiratory disease if we identify it as a bacterial respiratory disease, for example, to at least quarantine those birds. Now, one thing I did want to mention, and I've probably mentioned this in the past, if I walk into a barn of 10,000 birds and I hear, I'm walking through the barn nice and quietly, and I'm hearing coughing or sneezing, I can, for lack of a better word, I can kind of cheat, and I can euthanize one bird and I can open it up, and I can do a field necropsy. I can look at the air sacs and the gut and the lungs, and you can see what's abnormal, right? And if I if I'm like, you know what, there's something going on here, then I can take another bird that's also sick, and I can take that to a diagnostic lab with the goal of trying to protect those other 9,998 birds. In the backyard world, that's not always possible, and this is where it's challenging, and it's especially to be a veterinarian, when you have 3, 4, 5, or 6 birds, do we really want to euthanize a bird or two to save the remaining, you know, rest of the flock? And that's a much more difficult math equation in that scenario. So I certainly appreciate why people are somewhat sometimes resistant in working with a diagnostic lab, but veterinarians can take samples and still submit those samples to the diagnostic lab, and the bird doesn't have to die or anything like that either. But it's so important to just try to figure out what disease you have, because once you figure out the disease you have, then you can understand whether treatment is even going to be efficacious, whether it's going to work or not. So if we're dealing with a virus, for example, we just don't have antiviral medications for chickens. So you can give all the antibiotics you want, and you're just wasting time and energy and contributing to the misuse of antibiotics. But if you do have some bacteria, including mycoplasma and even E. coli can contribute to respiratory infections and pastorella, there are antibiotics that don't have withdrawal periods. Some of them over the counter, most of them not, that work. But there are antibiotics that you can give to your chickens that would potentially be efficacious against whatever bacterial infection you're dealing with that's causing a respiratory disease. So I sometimes hear people say, well, why am I going to send it to the diagnostic lab? All they're going to do is tell me I have a virus and then I can't do anything. And that's true some of the time, but not true all the time. And for people that don't want to send a bird to the diagnostic lab because it's going to get euthanized, work with your veterinarian. They can take a swab, not as sensitive, but they can take an oropharyngeal swab, submit that to a diagnostic lab, and you can get a diagnosis from that. And sometimes that's enough. Sometimes our results are inconclusive, and we just have to kind of, you know, use our best judgment at that point. And sometimes that will involve using an antibiotic, and sometimes it won't. So I just want people to be aware of, sometimes I think we, especially as in poultry, we really focus on the flock so much just because that's the way we're trained in the commercial poultry world. But I think for backyard, there are options, and I just want people to work with their veterinarians and to be thoughtful about the realities of that some of these things actually can be that regardless, even if you do nothing, but you identify that there's a virus, that's really important information, because giving antibiotics, giving bacitracin, for example, or giving some other antibiotic that you just got a hold of is not really going to help anyone, including the patient, the chicken. Mm-hmm. So just when we're thinking about respiratory diseases, and I like, Andy, the way you mentioned it, we're all dealing with a major pandemic, obviously, right now. And chickens, as I think most of you know, we've talked about before, also do get coronaviruses. Just to reiterate again, the coronaviruses that chickens get are not zoonotic. They don't spill over from chickens to humans, right? That's not a thing. That being said, avian influenzas, some of them can spill over from poultry and birds in general to humans. So one of the reasons that people recommend getting your influenza vaccine is that influenza, there are strains of influenza that are in chickens that can also cross over into humans. And being fully vaccinated against influenza is really important in order to prevent potential reassortments of viruses and all kinds of things that can cause future pandemics even, or just, you know, diseases in ourselves. So being vaccinated against influenza is also really important, especially for those of you that work with a lot of poultry. And that's definitely an area of concern for poultry workers. So mm-hmm. When we think about respiratory diseases, I know I'm kind of stating the obvious here, but you can't really figure out if you have a respiratory disease unless you see what the clinical signs are. That's first and foremost. And interestingly, in the commercial world, you know, there's a big push now to develop robotics and all types of artificial intelligence that can start detecting and listening for clinical signs. So it's pretty amazing where we're headed from a technological standpoint. But at this point, nothing is as good as the human eyes and ears. And every single day is a day that you can be on in your backyard coop and listen and observe and start to understand at a deeper level what's going on with your flock. As an epidemiologist, I'm huge into collecting data. So even for backyard birds, understanding how old the birds are, how heavy they are, how much they're eating, how much they're drinking, how many eggs they're producing a week. If that changes, then you might be able to tell even before some of the clinical signs start that there's something going on. But one of the things that commonly happens, the two big things that commonly happen when someone calls up who's a backyard poultry owner, an enthusiast, I'll ask them, well, are they eating less? Are they drinking less? Are they producing less eggs? Are they moving less? All those type of things. And I kind of get a maybe a lot of the time from folks. So having that kind of data is really important. And then kind of the softer kind of skills of being observant, you know, when you're really going to be able to watch your chickens kind of in their own environment the best is before you even get in the coop, before they even realize that you're there. So if you can, you know, kind of make it part of your routine just to observe them from a distance, then when something weird is going on, you'll be so much more prepared and so much more confident in your ability to be like, you know what, they're still producing the same amount of eggs, they're still eating the same amount, but something weird's going on, and I'm going to keep a close eye on them at this point. The other thing I've noticed, too, is that I've only had one owner that I've talked to of backyard birds that actually quarantined a sick bird before they called me. So most of the time, by the time someone calls me, the clinical signs, coughing and sneezing and tracheal rattles and all those things, those are all going on already. And then I'll say, well, have you quarantined that bird? And most people haven't done that. I think I've had one owner that's done that. So that's the first thing you can do. That's our, as we know from our own experiences, if you get sick, you got to quarantine. And hopefully that makes transmission, that transmission hasn't happened to the rest of the flock. So it's worth a try. So how do you do that? Make sure in anticipation of that scenario happening, you do have a sick pen, just an area in the other corner of your yard, for example, where you can keep your chickens that are sick. Sometimes that's not viable for some people. They either don't have the space or they don't have the proper equipment. But in a perfect world, that's what you would do. So things to look out for: coughing is relatively, a cough or two is somewhat rare, but you'll get it. Sneezing and sniffling, very common. Shaking of the head, you'll get. Reverse sneezing and tracheal rattles, almost like this just gurgling in the trachea because there's just gunk in there. Irritation and inflammation around the mucous membranes of the eyes, so kind of that puffiness that you described a little earlier. Those are the things that we're typically looking for when we're dealing with a respiratory disease. None of those, unfortunately, are what we call pathognomonic, and that's just a fancy way of saying if something's pathognomonic, then we know that it's a specific disease. So none of those are pathognomonic for a specific disease, and that's why the reality is if someone ever tells you, well, that's obviously coryza, or that's obviously infectious laryngotracheitis, or you've got virulent Newcastle disease, you need to kill all your chickens, right? It just doesn't work that way, unfortunately. I wish it did. But the reality is now you're at the next level, and hopefully you're able to quarantine your birds, and once you're able to quarantine them, then you can start working with your veterinarian to figure out what's going on. And the veterinarian and folks like myself, what we can offer, I'm not in private practice, but at least we can give some context. If we know that there is an outbreak of ILT, infectious laryngotracheitis, going on, for example, and we know roughly what geography you're in, someone like me, while I'm not a private veterinarian, at least I can provide some context, right? Because I have a little perspective about where maybe certain outbreaks of disease are, because that's kind of what I study. A veterinarian who treats backyard poultry, what they're going to be able to offer is they're going to be able to offer a client veterinary patient relationship, which is essential if you want to get your hands on antibiotics, for example. That veterinarian is essential. Most of these antibiotics are not available over the counter. There's literally three antibiotics that have zero withdrawal period. So in my mind, when I'm dealing with typically most backyard poultry owners are in it for the eggs, not the meat. So the three antibiotics that can be given, bacitracin, chlorotetracycline, and erythromycin, those are three antibiotics that, if used properly, don't have any withdrawal period, meaning that those antibiotics won't have any residues in the eggs that you're going to eat. And I know, Andy, you talked a little earlier about this reality of, like, you know, one of the big reasons that people really want backyard birds is they don't trust or don't want any risk of any antibiotics or other, you know, chemicals in their eggs. So kind of using these antibiotics willy-nilly doesn't really kind of dovetail with that goal. Now, of those three antibiotics, two of them are not available over the counter. So the only antibiotic that's available over the counter is bacitracin. And what I would tell owners is that if you have a veterinarian that you work with that treats backyard poultry, just make sure you have a relationship with them, in the sense that they know who you are, you know who they are, and if something happens, you can go to them and they can potentially take a swab and identify what type of bacteria are present. And if they find a bacteria from that swab, from that oral pharyngeal swab, that's let's say bacteria like mycoplasma, for example, then they can make recommendations on the antibiotics, chlorotetracycline or erythromycin, that are going to be able to most likely work against that type of bacteria. So if, however, they find no bacteria and they find a virus, I would want to know that, because I don't want to spend money and time treating a disease that doesn't exist. And I think that's a really important kind of be aware of. So big picture, when it comes to respiratory diseases, we don't know whether they're bacterial or a viral. And it's so important, because of that, to work with folks like myself, also folks that are small animal veterinarians that self-identify as treating backyard poultry. So that's becoming a little more common. So for those of you in California, on the UC Davis Cooperative Extension Poultry website, we have a whole list of small animal veterinarians by county that self-identify as treating backyard poultry. And several of them, when they have questions, they'll just email me. And if I don't know the answer, then I've got all these amazing resources at UC Davis that can give them some insights on that. Treating backyard poultry with antibiotics is kind of a challenge, because you got to remember, most of these drugs and the instructions for them are for treating thousands of chickens at a time. So kind of trying to identify how to, you know, do the math and to make sure that you're treating the birds correctly is not trivial, even for the folks that are trained to do it like us, because we're used to much larger flocks, for example. But we can always give kind of our two cents on the best way to make that work. So those are the big things I really wanted to stress. That there is no such thing as a, you know, kind of pathognomonic kind of clinical sign. But I did want to kind of mention a couple more things just about the most common diseases that are respiratory diseases. And I wanted to start off with, you know, I know we all have, unfortunately, a very intimate relationship now with coronaviruses, and chickens do get coronaviruses too. And I just wanted to kind of reiterate that. They get a coronavirus that we call infectious bronchitis virus. And interestingly enough, infectious bronchitis virus, it's similar in some ways to coronaviruses, and then most coronaviruses are not horrible, horrible, horrible. They don't cause a lot of mortality and morbidity. And infectious bronchitis is kind of one of these viruses, I think, that gets ignored a little. We focus so much on avian influenza and virulent Newcastle disease. But the reality is that infectious bronchitis virus probably causes the most economic damage around the world. And interestingly enough, the vaccines for infectious bronchitis virus, they don't work always the best, in part because the virus changes the poultry industry is kind of learning how to live with that and how to match the vaccines, the current vaccines, against the types of infectious bronchitis. There's a bunch of different types floating around the U.S. and trying to kind of sequence them and then determine what vaccines are going to be most efficacious for those strains that are floating around different parts of the United States is a lot of art and a lot of science kind of combined together. But it is one of those viruses. It's common. One of the things you look for that's almost pathognomonic is the eggs themselves. If you ever see an egg that has this almost leathery kind of feel to it, and it's dimpled and rough, that's one of the signs of infectious bronchitis virus. So if I'm a commercial poultry veterinarian, I go to a layer farm and I'm seeing respiratory signs, one of the first things you'll try to do is just look at the eggs. How do the eggs feel? And if I see those two things, if I'm seeing a respiratory virus and drop in egg production and the eggs that are coming out are kind of have that leathery type feel, then I'll be a little more confident that, yep, that's what we're doing. That's what we're dealing with at that point. So important to kind of understand. And, you know, the reality is we have vaccines that we use in the commercial world that we would never use in the backyard world. And this is this is one of those examples. But understanding what you're dealing with is really important. And sometimes, you know, if you're dealing with infectious bronchitis in your chickens, probably not going to cause a lot of mortality, will cause some morbidity sickness, is kind of basically what morbidity means. And sometimes you just want to know that so you can let the virus just run its course and then have your birds, get better and get back to normal. The one thing I would be aware of is that if you're going to get new chickens into your flock, just be aware that that virus could still persist and that it could, you know, kind of cause a new infection. And that's why in the commercial world, we don't introduce new chickens in the middle of a flock, but in the backyard world, that for various reasons.
Right. I was going to ask that. I was going to say, you know, out of the most common respiratory illnesses that you would see in a backyard setting, 6, 8, 12, 25 birds in a subdivision, and they have a respiratory illness. Out of those more common ones, how many, like you just described, like mom would always say, well, you just got to let it run its course. You'll be better, son. No problem. You know, if we just take that attitude and say, you know, I don't want to resort to antibiotics. I don't want to, you know, maybe I can try some all natural stuff, maybe some BetRx on the nostrils or whatever. But if we just say, you know, let's let it run its course and see what happens. Are there any of the kind of the top common backyard respiratory illnesses that are just going to be completely devastating? Like you'll walk out the next day and they just start dropping a lot. I mean, I guess that's always a possibility, but are any of them, or any of the common ones, that drastic where, you know, I really need to get on this or I'm going to lose my whole flock, or can we realistically take that? Let's just see what happens and maybe that'll run its course and everything will be all right.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Andy. The two ones, and fortunately they're not common in North America, the two ones where you would have that scenario of, you know, kind of massive mortality would be virulent Newcastle disease, which we get in Southern California, as people are aware of, for various reasons, and avian influenza, which there's some avian influenza right now on the east coast of the United States and some waterfowl that haven't, as far as I know, moved into any of the domestic population. So if you did see what you're describing, if you walked, you know, literally into your flock and 90% of the chickens are dead, that's when you're worried about, you know, two. And those now you want to immediately contact, you know, your veterinarian or someone like me.
Yeah, dial that 800 number from the USDA and say, oh, your state vet or exactly the local diagnostic lab, or if you have a vet you work with,
yep,
exactly, say, I just lost 90% of my flock in 2 days and something's up. So, okay.
Yep.
And thank goodness, like you said, those are somewhat rare. And so, because oftentimes you'll see, maybe even more times than not, if you follow the post or the thread long enough, they either run out and get antibiotic, right or wrong, dose correct or not, and give it, and then, oh, my birds are fine, they're great, this actually worked. They have no idea if it worked or not. If they would have done nothing, the birds, mm-hmm, probably, you know, could have just worked it on out through it. And so you see that an awful lot as well, if you kind of follow that along and you just kind of think in your mind, well, you know, they could have been absolutely just fine without anything and gotten through it with no issues. So, hey, let me go because I know you need to run here right before one. So let me go to my next commercial break and we'll come back and you can cover some more things that are important that you want to get across for this. Oops, sorry about that. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about respiratory illnesses in our backyard flocks with poultry veterinarian Dr. Maurice Bateski. And this episode, if you're a new listener, will be available as a podcast, archived, if you will, in its entirety, just moments after the show ends. I would say within 15 minutes, you'll probably be able to go back and listen to it into its entirety and see if you missed anything and take some notes and things like that. So we'll take another quick short commercial break, and we'll be right back with respiratory illnesses in our chickens.
Since 1921, Stromberg's has been a family-owned and operated business providing quality poultry and poultry supplies to their customers. Today, the Stromberg's family offers over 200 different breeds of poultry, including chickens, waterfowl, and game birds. They also offer poultry supplies for both the beginner and experienced poultry keeper. Stromberg should be on the top of your list when it's time to order your new day-old baby chicks and poultry supplies. Order online today at StrombergsChickens.com. That's StrombergsChickens.com. Metzer Farms is now hatching and shipping the premier egg layer. This girl is consistently laying jumbo eggs with a higher nutrient density and lower water content than your eggs now. She is an extremely hardy bird and the most heat and cold tolerant egg layer available, allowing for year-round outdoor production. An eggshell unmatched in sturdiness and thickness, making cracks a thing of the past. Increase your health and double your egg profits. Of course, we're talking about ducks. Duck eggs are revered by chefs for their succulent flavor and by bakers for being the better baking egg. Learn more about this extraordinary duck, the Golden 300, or any of our other 35-plus breeds of ducks and geese at MetzerFarms.com and order your next flock from us.
And now we return to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer with your host, Andy Schneider.
Yeah, also want to send a quick shout out to our good friends over at Carefree Enzymes, who also make some really cool all-natural products for our backyard flock. We've been using them for years. I think the first time I had lunch with Patrick, who owns Carefree Enzymes, was probably back 2010 maybe, so maybe 12 years ago when we got introduced to his products. You may know them more when you're walking through the stores like the because a lot of companies will take his product and relabel it. And so you may be familiar with like the ManaPro poultry protector for mites and lice, but that's his product in the bottle, and scaly leg protector that he's got as well for scaly leg mites. He's got water protector that you can put into your water, and he's got some coop cleaners and some coop bedding spray to keep insects away. He's got a whole array of really, really cool products. He even has products that you can, okay, let me think for a second. It's hummingbirds. Is it hummingbirds or bees? Maybe it's a product that, anyway, if you're into hummingbirds and bees, he's got some products, and some of them just came out, which are truly amazing. And I just can't off the top of my head right now remember what they are for, but something that the bee folks and the hummingbird folks would absolutely be able to utilize. So carefreeenzymes.com, if you want to check those folks out. They even have he even has stuff that you can put in. Of course, we don't advocate having wild bird baths and wild bird feeders in your backyard with your backyard poultry, because that's just basically attracting disease to your backyard. Dr. Bridget McRae did a great article in Chicken Whisperer magazine about that several years ago. I still share it very frequently because people will often say, hey, can I buy this bag of bird feed, wild bird feed for my chickens? Is that going to be okay for them? And then notoriously in that comment section, you'll have, oh, the first thing I do when I let my chickens out is they run over to the bottom of the bird wild bird feeder where the wild birds have scattered all the bird seed down, and they just are so excited to have a smorgasbord. And of course, while they're eating all that bird seed from below that bird feeder, that's also where all those wild birds poop. And then there you have it. So you're going to have mites or lice or these infectious illnesses that we're talking about now, or maybe even worse. So we don't advocate that. But they even have things that you can put in your wild bird baths. Let's say all your wild bird feeders and what are in the front of the house and your chickens are in the back. They have things you can put in the bird tank as well, the bird bath and whatnot for them. So check them out, carefreeenzymes.com. All righty, so just a few more minutes here with respiratory illness with our good friend, poultry veterinarian Maurice Pateski and Dr. Maurice Pateski. And I'll let you continue with some things that you wanted to convey to our listeners before you head out.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, Andy. You're reminding me when you're talking about the bird seed, it reminds me of my kids when I try to give them trail mix. They inevitably eat all the chocolate chips and the M&Ms and the raisins and the peanuts are just stuck there for the grown-ups. So, and that the chickens and animals do the same thing. Obviously, they pick the, you know, when you feed them chicken scratch, then they have a choice between chicken scratch and the pelleted feed. They'll choose chicken scratch. That's potato chips. I do the same thing every day, unfortunately, sometimes. So,
you know, it's funny. I have a great – it was about 3 or 4 years ago, and I've got a great – it's not even time-lapse. It looks like time-lapse, but it's not. It was a live Facebook video I did, and I said, guys, check this out if you don't believe me, what I've been harping on all these years. And I sprinkled out about a basketball round size area of laying pellets. And then once all the chickens kind of came over, I sprinkled out on top of the laying pellets a nice coating of, I think it was scratch. And you can see, it's not time-lapse, it's live, how all of a sudden that camera, it just, you can see all that scratch go away.
Of course. We all love our carbs, right?
It's so funny. And that's another thing I don't understand. I really don't understand it because we tested this product, too, a couple of 3 years ago, and you can go and see the results. We didn't have really good results with it, but some other companies have started out mixing with pellets. Basically, it looks just like scratch with some pellets mixed in. And not that they get away with it, but I say they get away with calling this nutritionally balanced feed because all of the nutritionally balanced stuff are in the pellets they happen to add to the scratch. And so people are, of course, going to say, oh, my chickens love this. This is, oh, they love it so much. Mm-hmm. And when we've tested these type of products, we notice that all the scratch grains are gone and all the pellets are left, which makes it nutritionally balanced. So, and I've seen some posts where they're like, man, I switched to this stuff. Egg production dropped dramatically because, again, they were eating all the treat out of the food bag and at the feeder, and all the pellets, which made it traditionally balanced, were left. And then our if that's in our case, when we were testing this, all that was left were the pellets, and I still wouldn't add anything to it. I'm like, okay, you got pellets or nothing now. They would finally eat the pellets in some cases, but I'm like, okay, so they ate the pellets on Monday, but Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, they had nothing but scratch, and then they eat the pellets on Saturday. They're still not getting a daily nutritionally balanced. It's like eating, okay, I'm going to have pizza and corn dogs all week, but I'll have some broccoli on Saturday, and that'll be good because it's nutritionally balanced. So that's the results we got, but some folks are kind of doing that with their feed. So, okay, continue, please, with the respiratory illness, and you just head on out when you got to head out.
Okay, well, great. So I kind of wanted to save the most important one for last when it comes to the causative agents, and that's mycoplasma. So we've probably talked about mycoplasma but in the past, but just to reiterate, mycoplasma is a bacteria, and in the backyard world, there's kind of a it's considered somewhat ubiquitous, so very common. And if your backyard chickens have those respiratory signs that we talked about, coughing, sneezing, nasal discharge, conjunctivitis, kind of irritation around the eye, swelling of the sinuses around the eye, all those type of things, you know, drop in egg production, all that kind of stuff too. Then especially in the backyard world, we think mycoplasma first and second and third. And then if we're proven wrong eventually, then we go somewhere else. And that's why I wanted to mention, you know, mycoplasma is a bacteria and there are some antibiotics that can work against it. To your point, Andy, mycoplasma doesn't have high mortality. So sometimes the wait and see approach is certainly, reasonable to consider, at least. In the commercial world, we need to know a little more about that because we're losing some productivity in that point, and that's a huge, the margins are so narrow that it's a real issue. A couple things I do want to point out, though. If you do have mycoplasma, a lot of people go to shows and they trade birds, and I've had people reach out to me who are breeders. And mycoplasma, first of all, can be vertically or horizontally transferred, and that's just a fancy way of saying mycoplasma can be spread from the hen to the chick. The developing embryo can actually have mycoplasma. If you get hatching eggs, it's really important to understand that if you're a breeder, for example, that those hatching eggs can, if you've got mycoplasma in your flock and you're trying to get rid of mycoplasma, consider the breeders also. It's very relatively common for the breeders to be positive. And unfortunately, the best way to deal with that scenario is to depopulate the flock. Now, in the backyard world, if you have a backyard chicken that's got mycoplasma and that chicken's not going anywhere, to me, I don't see that as a huge issue. Like we said, it's not a high mortality disease. However, if you're breeding or if you go to shows, now we have kind of a conundrum in the sense that there's a lot of people that unfortunately breed and go to shows that have mycoplasma that never test for mycoplasma. So those folks just go on about their life and they just assume, oh, my chickens are healthy, or they just got a little sniffle, you know, I'll wipe it off before the show and they'll be fine, right? There's some of us that are more responsible from my perspective, and they would have those birds tested. They find out it's mycoplasma. They talk to their veterinarian. Their veterinarian says, mycoplasma is ubiquitous. There's probably a gazillion other birds at the show that also have mycoplasma. It's fine. And then there's also like this third group of people that get the tested and that find out they have mycoplasma, and they're like, okay, I can't in good conscience now, especially while these birds are somewhat sick, I can't take them to the show. The problem is now that mycoplasma can persist. So let's say you actually went to a veterinarian and treated your birds for mycoplasma. You found out that they isolated mycoplasma. They were able to figure out that it was sensitive to chlorotetracycline or erythromycin, whatever the antibiotic that the veterinarian prescribed. You use that antibiotic. Now, in that scenario, can those birds, the chicks from those birds, can you sell those birds? Can you bring them to shows? And if you talk to someone that knows a lot about mycoplasma, they would possibly say no because the antibiotic didn't probably get to every little nook and cranny of the chicken. That's unfortunate with one of the realities of antibiotics. So maybe they eventually can have low levels of mycoplasma come back and have some of those clinical signs or just be a carrier that's asymptomatic moving forward. So that's what makes mycoplasma so challenging. In the commercial world, we'll just depopulate typically, and those carcasses will be eliminated in such a way that we can, you know, hopefully prevent mycoplasma from spreading to the next flock. But in the backyard world, it's a little more challenging, and it's especially more challenging for people that are breeding and especially more challenging for people that are going to shows. what iteration of biosecurity and quarantine and treatment they're going to follow. And that's a hard thing. I think when I talk to owners, one of the things that I'm always, you know, that in my mind, I want to provide them the information. I don't want to always tell them what I think is the right answer, because I think it's, in some cases, I don't want to punish someone for doing everything and treating and even sometimes getting negative tests back. And now I'm going to tell them, well, that's still not good enough, because if we did a necropsy, maybe we'd find a little mycoplasma that could have potentially transmitted to another chicken. So it's a slightly difficult kind of conversation. But mycoplasma, you know, that the dogma is that it's somewhat ubiquitous in all backyard poultry. That doesn't mean that everyone's backyard poultry has it, but it's just something to be aware of. And antibiotics can work. Sometimes there's a lot of antibiotics that there's a lot of resistance among mycoplasma. So there are some antibiotics, including some that have egg withdrawal periods, that do have some efficacy, but it's there's nothing that's perfect, right? And we all know that when they say this antibiotic works against this bacteria, that's a simplification. The reality is that even if you use antibiotics 100% properly, there's going to be some resistance. That's kind of the way the bacteria work. And it's just something to be aware of kind of moving forward. And that's why, and I'm just going to circle back to, you know, the most important topic when we're dealing with respiratory disease, that's why prevention is so important. So purchasing your birds from the National Poultry Improvement Plan, inspected hatcheries is really important. I understand that most NPIP hatcheries, there's a woman that I think through you, Andy, reached out to me a couple of years ago and mentioned that most NPIP hatcheries don't do mycoplasma surveillance or testing. That's not part of most state programs. That being said, if they're part of the NPIP, at least you know that they're following, you know, basic biosecurity practices and that those facilities are being inspected. So at the minimum, I would describe those facilities as kind of top of the pyramid when it comes to biosecurity. Sometimes you get bad luck and you just get a flock, or you get some chicks or some hatching eggs that have disease. But, you know, if you want to be the most cautious, working with those NPIP hatcheries is really going to be in your best interest. And then when you're working with these multi-age flocks, you know, almost every backyard flock has, you know, some chickens they got from one place, a couple other chickens from another place. So when you inevitably do bring new chickens into your flock, quarantine them for 7 to 10 days and keep an eye on them. And if they've got any of those clinical signs we pointed out earlier, those are birds you do not want to integrate into your flock. So with that, I'll answer any questions, and I wanted to thank you again for your time and wish everyone a happy new year.
No questions from me. It was great. Hopefully lots of folks took some good notes and can refer back to this when they walk outside and have that coughing or sneezing chicken or see that swollen eye and whatnot. So thank you very much for elaborating on respiratory illnesses in our backyard flocks today, and we'll look forward to seeing you again in February, second Thursday in February. We look forward to seeing you then. Doc, thanks for coming on so much.
Great. Thank you, Andy. Have a good month.
You too. Bye-bye. All righty, that's going to wrap up another show of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And remember, backyard poultry enthusiasts, Chicken Whisperer magazine is there for you to utilize. All of the folks that write for Chicken Whisperer magazine are poultry scientists, poultry veterinarians, poultry nutritionists, and they have some great articles over the last 7 years of this magazine. And you know what the best part is? You can access all of that information for free. 7, 8 years we've been doing the magazine, no bait and switch, no, oh, by the way, sign up for free, digital edition, and then guess what, it goes away and you have to buy the print edition for $9.95 per year. No, we have plenty of people that buy the $9.95 print issue every year. We mail it right to their mailbox. They sit in their easy chair and flip through the beautiful color pages of Chicken Whisperer magazine, but you can access it absolutely free with chickenwhisperermagazine.com. It's a great laid out website. You can see articles from the Future Current magazine and all the past magazines. So you can read every single article from Dr. Pateski, Dr. Curran Gehring, Dr. Bridget McRae, Dr. Zach Williams, Dr. Jessica Fox, all of them from the beginning. 7 years of information from these experts at chickenwhisperermagazine.com. We hope that you will take advantage of that. And if you want to have a real live issue, if you will, mail to you, we can do that as well. You can subscribe to both the digital edition, which is free, and the print edition for $9.95 per year. And it comes out 4 times a year, winter, spring, summer, and fall. And so we hope you have a great rest of your January. We're here in Georgia. Everybody's yelling about snowstorm, ice storm, and winter mix and all this stuff. So everybody's running to the stores and getting eggs and milk and bread and meat and everything else because they're saying that the deep south here could get anywhere from 3 inches to over a foot of snow, depending on where you live where this line comes in. And I'm still skeptical, being a lifelong Georgia resident, when they start talking about a system that's off the coast of Hawaii that will affect us on Sunday, and it all depends on another system that's coming up and bringing moisture, and they have to collide, and one's going to go over the other, and it depends on where they meet, how they meet, what they do when they meet, and what the temperature is at that very time. Just a little skeptical, but hey, you know, you want to be a little prepared just in case it actually happens. So what am I going to do to prepare my chickens? I don't know if I have – yeah, I got enough time to tell you. Nothing. They're going to be just fine. So hope you all have a fantastic rest of the week, rest of the month. We'll actually see you next Thursday right here on Blog Talk Radio with poultry scientist Dr. Bridget McRae. And so we hope you can join us then right here, 2 p.m. next Thursday.
This has been Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tucker Milling, with your host, Andy Schneider. For more information, find us on the web at chickenwhisperer.com, on Facebook by typing in The Chicken Whisperer, on Twitter at Backyard Poultry, and on Instagram at The Real Chicken Whisperer. Thanks for listening.